Now, what is water-wise gardening? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, it's a term that's been coined in recent decades, and as it suggests, it's using water as wisely and conservation-mindedly as possible, so that ideally nothing goes to waste. But that does require a fairly detailed knowledge of where the water's coming from, how it's utilised, and how best to value it and conserve it in the gardening context.
Mm. Now, speaking of where water is coming from, what would you say are some practical steps that can be taken so that we can harness rainwater, which is a really good way of conserving water?
Yeah, certainly. Well, it does depend on your living circumstances, of course, but as we've seen over recent decades, increasingly people are putting in water tanks. In fact, it's now part of the BASICS building code that properties have to have a water tank if there's any space whatsoever. Of course, it varies according to apartment living, but certainly for standalone housing, you're required to have a minimum, I believe, of 4,000 litres. That's not very much, and primarily, of course, that goes towards toilet flushing and sometimes laundry use. However, you know, depending on your size of block and the type of plantings you have, that water won't necessarily stretch very far for irrigation purposes. But overall, of course, it adds to the conserving of the water sources in the dam. So to that extent, it's a good thing.
Mm. What would you say is the most effective size water tank a average Sydney dwelling could have on their property?
Yes, well, it depends a lot on the roof size as well of that of the dwelling. With more two-storey dwellings going in, you actually have less roof size for actual square metreage of flooring over two floors. But if you took a smallish house these days, probably 100 square metres or more, then you think in terms of every square metre of that roof with 1 mil of rain on it collects 1 litre into a water tank.
Wow.
And so with our declining rainfall in Sydney, in many parts, we're, you know, it was not uncommon in parts of Sydney to get 700-800 mil a year, even 1,000 mil in the higher areas. That could translate into 100,000 litres across a year if you're at the upper end of that scale. But these days, with that falling away, I know that where we are at Holsworthy, we've had years where only between 300 and 400 mils, it used to be in the 700 mil range. That's a lot less rain going into your tank each year. So you scale your tank according to your needs, if you can, and according to your available space, because, of course, tanks have a pretty significant footprint when they start getting up in the literage. But the more you can fit in, the better it is.
Mm.
A lot of properties, they can only fit in slimline tanks, and that's a more costly exercise, but at least means that they can put in up to 5,000 litres usually per slimline tank down the side of the house where it may be the only available space.
Mm.
So there's a lot of factors to take into account, in other words, in order to come up with the right sort of formula. But you've got to think in terms of 10 litres per metre per week to keep arable exotic crops going. So if you're growing garden veggies, for example, in the summertime, you definitely need that kind of watering regime, though it does depend, of course, on how you deliver the water in the garden.
Mm. And then I guess soils can be enhanced to cope with kind of drier conditions as well, can't they?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you bring that up, because it's kind of the forgotten factor. People start thinking about, well, how much water can I get onto my crop? I'm restricted by level 2 to a watering can once a day. Well, obviously, you make sure you do that in the evening when it's hot weather, or in the early morning if that's not feasible, so that the water can be best utilised by the crop and you don't get wet leaves that then get burned in the hot sun, those kind of issues. But it's very important to be mulching and be composting the soil as much as you possibly can. The more material you have, which is obviously a great aid to the feeding of the plants themselves, but the more capacity it has for water holding, particularly for exotic crops, the better it is. Having said that, there's the issue of having friable soil, which means the capacity of the soil to drain. So you need that capacity for the water to absorb and hold moisture and be protected by mulch from too much evaporation. But equally, for those sorts of annual crops in particular, you need that water also to be able to drain away. So your subsoil is important. And of course, in Sydney, we have many sandstone areas where there's not a great thickness of topsoil. So it comes down to building that topsoil as much as you can over the years. And of course, many people kind of shortcut that process by building above ground garden beds, which is certainly a good idea. But if you have, here again, if you have surrounds that are metal, for example, as many people have, sort of with the converted water tank style garden, raised garden bed, there is the capacity for that to heat up in the sun and thereby dry the soil out more.
Yeah.
So once again, there's many, many factors to take into account, but the more you can build that soil quality, maintain the friability for the crop, but at the same time have the capacity for that soil to hold the moisture and be protected from evaporation through mulching, the better off you'll be.
Absolutely. When we're looking at our gardens and when we're looking at what we have in our gardens, what would you suggest are some plants that kind of thrive or at least, you know, survive quite well in drought conditions?
Yes, well, I'm on 5 acres personally up here in the Blue Mountains. It's lovely, but we've had a fabulous rhododendron, which is about 3.5 metres tall, growing happily ever since we bought the place. It was well established then 20 years ago, and that has unfortunately been just fried in this last bushfire season with the extreme heat, and I don't think the smoke has done it any good either, and we were just not able to save it, which is a great pity. It's a beautiful plant. It got through its flowering very early in the season, perhaps anticipating the worst, and then it's just fried it. It's completely dead, and we have a lot of deciduous trees that previous owners had also planted, and they too are going through an almost early autumn, you could say, where they're just having the leaves fried off them.
Gosh.
And they're looking more like it's winter than summer.
That's happening to my lily pilly at the moment. It's making me very sad.
Yeah, even the lily pilly. Well, we've got a couple of Gynea lilies growing at the Scrap Holsworthy Community Garden out there in Holsworthy, where the Scrap Centre is, and even they have had burned leaves, and we've actually lost a young macadamia for the same reasons. I mean, it's just been so extreme that you can't really even guarantee any plant these days unless it's under relatively good cover of established trees. A lot of exotics won't make it, and certainly it's been very hard to keep the veggie beds going with water restrictions and the extreme conditions that we've faced. So hard to give
a good answer to that one.
Any firm guarantees, that's for sure. But certainly if you can provide the right sort of shelter, and if you can stick more to natives that are endemic to the area, then, you know, you have a better chance of survival.
Absolutely. Now, you're holding a number of workshops in February to help people with their water-wise gardening and their drought-proof gardening. Tell us a little bit about those really quickly.
Yeah, well, primarily I depend on what councils require, because we generally do them for councils in various locations. So we are doing a number of composting and worm farming workshops, as we've done over many years. And, of course, that teaches people how to convert their organic waste, both food and garden waste, back into useful soil amendments, be it compost or worm casting. Mm. And they're incredibly valuable for that purpose. And so that's the sort of step one in terms of water-wise gardening, in my view. Mm. And after that, we do have a couple booked for a couple of councils that are going to deal directly with water-wise gardening. So some of these tips and explanations I've given so far, and also the issue of irrigation itself. So rather than standing with a handheld hose, even with a trigger, which when the restrictions are lifted, if they're lifted, you're permitted to do at certain times of the day, can be supplanted by drip irrigation, for example, which is a form that's been around for many years. And it's a matter of simply buying the tube and laying it and understanding the process and the rate at which the drip feed the garden, which is usually quite minimal. It's about 3 litres per hour per drip hole, and you can get them spaced differently, but usually it's around about 300 mils or where you would typically place plants apart. And so you can feed directly to the base of the plant. There are forms of subsurface irrigation, and one that's probably become most popular recently is wicking gardens. Now, you do need to actually build an enclosure for the garden in order to properly achieve this, but you can run pipes through the base, cover them with gravel and sand briefly, and then, you know, have your medium, your growing medium above that, and plant in, and you just simply top up those pipes, which have usually simple holes drilled in them that enable a certain degree of the water to wick out, as it were, to rise up in through the media and feed the plants that way, which is
It seems like a little bit of work can go a real long way when it comes to drought-proofing your garden. It's all so interesting. Peter, unfortunately, we're out of time and we've got to leave it there. But thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thank you from my garden. My garden thanks you very much.
We don't have time, but just remember grey water. So a lot of the water that you have going through your shower and so on, depending on the soaps you use, they can also be collected in buckets, and that can be bucketed out.
I've got my buckets in my shower, and then we go out and we water my poor rosemary plant and my poor lemon tree.
That's the way to go.
Peter, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
That's a pleasure, Jess. Bye.